I want to start today with, well, kind of a paradox. You go into this high-end electronics store and you spend a small fortune on a sleek, incredibly advanced piece of wearable tech.
Right, like a supercomputer for your wrist.
Exactly. And you buy it for one highly specific, deeply personal reason, which is just to keep a vulnerable member of your family safe. You strap it onto them and you feel this massive wave of relief.
Sure.
But the paradox is that in the exact moment of an actual emergency, like that terrifying minute they wander out of sight, that expensive, glossy device might actually be the absolute worst tool for the job.
Yeah, it completely shatters the illusion of security.
It really does.
Yeah.
Because its very design, the things that make it a great consumer product, are the exact things that make it fail when life is on the line.
Right, because you believe you've purchased a safety net, you know. The marketing materials always highlight some location feature, but what you've actually strapped to your loved one is just a device built for convenience, forced to perform in a crisis.
And that distinction, the gap between consumer convenience and genuine safety, is the entire focus of our deep dive today. We are pulling apart a really insightful guide from AngelSense.
That's a great source.
Yeah, it tackles this complex decision that special needs families navigate constantly. The choice between buying an off-the-shelf standard GPS smartwatch versus investing in a dedicated, purpose-built autism tracking device.
And for you, listening to this, even if you don't have a loved one on the autism spectrum, I mean, the underlying engineering and design principles we're looking at today are just fascinating.
Oh, absolutely.
We are stripping away the marketing jargon to look at the intersection of everyday consumer tech and highly specialized human vulnerability. It really asks a foundational question about how we engineer tools for human beings whose brains interact with the physical world differently than, you know, the neurotypical population.
Yeah, and the AngelSense guide draws a sharp line in the sand right from the beginning. It focuses on the origin stories of these two tech categories. So
right.
On one side, we have standard GPS watches, and on the other, dedicated autism trackers.
Right.
The core argument is that the original blueprint of a device totally dictates how it behaves in an emergency.
Yeah, think about the foundational philosophy of a standard mainstream smartwatch. The engineers who designed it were essentially trying to shrink a mobile smartphone and strap it to an adult's wrist.
Right, like an independent teenager and adult.
Exactly, that's the target demographic.
Yeah.
So the architecture of the software is built to handle like 50 different tasks: streaming music, tracking your heart rate during a run, receiving text messages, managing your calendar.
Yeah, a million things at once.
Right. And tracking location is just one application running in the background. It was an afterthought, honestly. An extra feature they realized that they could include just because the hardware already possessed a GPS chip.
It's the Swiss Army knife approach. And I know that analogy gets used a lot, but if we really look at the mechanics of a Swiss Army knife, it explains the flaw perfectly.
Right.
Because a Swiss Army knife is brilliant for general everyday use. It has all these different folding parts, the little scissors, the corkscrew, the tiny saw. But those folding joints are failure points.
Yes.
If you are a surgeon in an operating room performing a high-stakes, life-saving procedure, you do not want a folding blade with a hinge that might snap under pressure. You want a surgical scalpel. One single, uninterrupted piece of forged steel designed to do one exact thing with zero compromises.
I love that analogy. And the interface of these devices reflects that exact difference in engineering. Because a standard smartwatch acts as a miniature phone, the user interface relies on complex nested menus.
Oh, yeah.
You have to tap a microscopic icon on a tiny glass screen, swipe down, confirm a prompt. It requires a really high degree of executive function, reading comprehension, and fine motor skills.
Which, let's be honest, can be frustrating even when you're just trying to pause a podcast while carrying groceries.
Right. It's annoying for anyone. Now, compound that frustration for someone with cognitive or physical challenges. It's just a non-starter.
Yeah.
So purpose-built trackers invert that design philosophy entirely. They use what the source calls caregiver-first functionality.
The caregiver-first.
Right. The engineers aren't trying to build a tiny smartphone. They are building a lifeline. So they trade the sleek, fragile glass screen for large tactile buttons. The device relies on gross motor movements rather than fine motor skills.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, and the complexity is intentionally stripped out of the physical hardware and shifted over to the caregiver's smartphone app. The user isn't forced to adapt to a complex operating system. The technology is simplified to accommodate the user.
But the physical buttons are just the surface level, right?
Cool.
Where the engineering of these devices really diverges and where the stakes get incredibly high is what happens under the hood the second that wearer wanders out of a safe zone.
The moment of elopement.
Yes.
In the autism community, wandering or elopement is a critical issue. And when it happens, you are racing the clock. The internal tech specs of the device become the only metric that matters.
And the source material highlights a massive, like truly terrifying flaw in how standard smartwatches handle location data. Because a mainstream watch is juggling those 50 different background apps we talked about, the user is usually the one who has to set the GPS update frequency.
Right.
You literally have to tell the watch how often to wake up, ping a satellite 12,000 miles in space, and record its coordinates.
And people almost always set those intervals far apart, say every 10 or 15 minutes.
Because pinging a satellite requires a massive power draw.
Exactly. It drains the battery so fast.
But think about the physics of a moving human being. If a child is actively wandering, a lot of ground can be covered in 15 minutes.
A terrifying amount of ground.
Right. If the device only records a location 4 times an hour, the caregiver is looking at huge blind spots on a map. You could be searching a park, and the wearer could already be a mile down a busy road.
Yeah, it's just not fast enough.
The guide also mentions that a lot of consumer trackers rely on proprietary networks. They don't use dedicated cellular bands. They rely on pinging off other devices made by the same company via Bluetooth.
Which creates a severely fragmented search grid. I mean, if the wearer wanders into a rural area or simply a neighborhood where people happen to use a different brand of smartphone,
it just goes dark.
Completely dark. It loses its ability to relay the location at all. Dedicated autism trackers solve this by utilizing automatically adapting connectivity.
Okay, so how does that adaptation actually work under the hood?
It's essentially a cascading sequence of fail-safes. So an advanced tracker relies primarily on a dedicated cellular connection and GPS satellites. But satellite signals require a line of sight to the sky.
Sure.
If the wearer wanders into a concrete tunnel or deep inside a large shopping mall, the GPS radio loses the signal. But instead of just going dark, the tracker software instantly detects the signal degradation. Yeah, it suspends the GPS radio and activates local scanners, like Wi-Fi sniffers. It scans the environment for local router signals, cross-references those router signatures with global databases, and triangulates the wearer's position indoors.
That is wild.
It's seamless. It hands off the connection from satellite to cellular tower to local Wi-Fi, ensuring the caregiver's map never stops updating.
The AngelSense guide details a specific software feature called Runner Mode that takes advantage of that connectivity, right?
Yes, Runner Mode is a game changer.
Normally, the device operates using a geofence, a digital boundary drawn around a safe zone, like a school or backyard. And while inside that fence, the device might only update its location every 30 minutes. But the second the child crosses that invisible boundary, the caregiver gets an alert.
Immediate alert.
And from their own phone, the caregiver can activate Runner Mode. This forces the wearer's tracker to abandon all power-saving protocols and increase its update frequency to real-time, second-by-second tracking.
And they can loop in first responders directly from that exact same map screen.
It fundamentally changes the device from a passive observation tool into an active high-alert emergency beacon.
It really does.
But I have to pause and play devil's advocate for a second. Pushing back on the criticism of consumer smartwatches and their battery drain, I can't help but feel like we are criticizing them for obeying the laws of physics.
Fair point.
I mean, any piece of technology with a cellular modem that is constantly transmitting real-time data to a satellite network is going to drain its lithium-ion battery in a matter of hours. You can't fault an Apple Watch or a Garmin for dying if they're doing the exact same mathematical computations. Isn't battery drain just an unavoidable reality?
Well, you're touching on the central engineering challenge of wearable tech. The physics of battery chemistry are universal. You can't cheat physics.
Right.
But the difference lies in state machine logic, what we might call adaptive battery intelligence.
Okay, walk me through that. How does it manage that if it's not cheating the physics?
It manages the power budget entirely differently. See, a consumer smartwatch is always awake. Even when you aren't looking at it, the operating system is listening for Bluetooth handshakes, refreshing weather widgets, checking email servers. It bleeds power constantly.
Oh, true. Even my watch dies by dinner time if I get too many texts.
Exactly. A purpose-built tracker utilizes strict geofencing to manage its power budget. When the tracker recognizes it is safely inside the digital boundary of home, the software actively shuts down the cellular modem and the GPS radio.
So it goes into a deep sleep.
Yes. It relies on the local low-energy Wi-Fi connection to confirm it hasn't moved. And because it isn't running a dozen consumer apps, it hoards nearly all of its battery life. It only spends that massive energy budget if the perimeter is breached or if the caregiver manually triggers runner mode.
Oh, that makes sense.
The engineering priority isn't about having a larger battery. It's about ensuring that 90% of the battery is fiercely protected for the exact hour it takes to save a life.
That is a brilliant inversion of how we normally think about device performance.
Mm.
We usually want our tech doing as much as possible all the time.
Right, maximum features.
But here, the device is engineered to do absolutely nothing until the precise moment everything goes wrong.
Exactly. But all of this sophisticated software, you know, the adaptive battery logic, the seamless network handoffs, we have to confront a much more immediate physical reality here.
Oh, right. Because none of it matters if the device is sitting at the bottom of a storm drain because the wearer ripped it off.
The wearability factor. It's huge. We're talking about human beings, many of whom have completely different sensory processing systems than the engineers who design standard wearables.
Yeah, the AngelSense guide dives deep into this sensory barrier. Because for a massive portion of the population, wearing anything on the wrist is just a non-starter.
Yeah.
The guide discusses watch rash, the friction, the trapped moisture, the constant physical pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And the consumer watch industry only really offers two solutions, and both are fundamentally flawed for this specific use case.
Right. You have the slim form smartwatches, which are designed to be light and unobtrusive. But they achieve that by using incredibly delicate materials and microscopic batteries. They simply cannot house the heavy-duty cellular modems required for standalone emergency tracking.
And the alternative is the ruggedized, heavy-duty outdoor watches. They have the battery size and the durability, but they are massive.
Too bulky.
Yeah, they catch on sleeves, they bang into doorways, and they are heavy.
And to understand why this is a critical failure point, we have to talk about sensory gating in the human brain.
Oh, this is fascinating. Think about your own experience for a second. If you put on a wool sweater and it has a slightly itchy tag on the back of the neck, when you first put it on, you feel it. It's annoying.
Very annoying.
But within 5 or 10 minutes, your neurological system essentially mutes that signal. Your brain decides the itchy tag is not a threat, so it stops bringing it to your conscious attention. You forget it's there. That is sensory gating.
But for an individual with autism who experiences sensory processing differences, that neurological gating mechanism might not work the same way.
The brain doesn't habituate to the stimulus.
Exactly. The feeling of a tight rubber watch band pulling on the skin isn't a minor annoyance that fades away. The brain processes that tactile input with the same intense blaring alarm on minute 60 as it did on second one.
Wow.
It is an inescapable, all-consuming physical threat signal.
So telling someone to just ignore it is neurologically impossible.
Totally impossible.
If the device causes a sensory overload, the wearer will remove it. It's literally an act of self-preservation.
Which is why, in the context of autism tracking, physical comfort isn't a luxury feature to be added in later. It is the foundational requirement of safety. A device cannot save a life if it's left on a kitchen counter.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So to solve this, high-quality dedicated trackers bypass the wrist entirely. They offer an entire ecosystem of wearing options tailored to the individual's sensory profile.
Yeah, lots of options.
We are talking about specialized fabric pouches that pin to the inside of a pocket, belt loops, and lanyards. The source even details custom, concealable clothing.
I love that part.
Yeah, like undershirts with integrated pockets where the tracker sits flush against the body, completely hidden and free from shifting or rubbing.
It allows the caregiver to place the technology where the wearer's specific sensory profile is least likely to register it as an intrusion. Furthermore, many of these options utilize tamper-resistant mechanics.
Like security tags.
Exactly. They might use magnetic locking pins, similar to security tags in retail stores, meaning the device requires a specialized key to remove. This prevents the wearer from discarding the tracker during a moment of heightened distress or a sensory meltdown.
And the sensory accommodations go beyond just the physical fabrics, too. The guide points out how removing the screen and the apps is a sensory accommodation in itself.
Preventing cognitive overload.
Yes. Because a standard smartwatch is an entertainment center. It flashes notifications, it vibrates with spam calls, it offers games. For an autistic individual, that constant barrage of digital stimuli can trigger severe anxiety.
It's just too much input.
Purpose-built trackers replace all of that with foolproof, invisible tools. They utilize auto-answer mechanisms. So if the caregiver calls the device, the wearer doesn't have to navigate a screen to press accept. The device automatically opens a two-way speakerphone channel.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah. The caregiver can instantly assess the environment, listen for traffic or background noise, and talk directly to the wearer to soothe them.
The device is stripped of anything that could cause stress, leaving only a pure, uninterrupted lifeline. But the decision to strip away features to remove the fun aspects of a smartwatch and replace them with tamper-proof security locks that brings us to the most difficult emotional crossroads families face.
It's the tightrope walk, right? Between fostering an individual's independence and ensuring their absolute physical safety.
Yeah. How a family navigates that balance often depends heavily on the individual's specific diagnosis and capabilities. The source material frames this by looking at different support needs within the autism spectrum.
Let's clearly define what we mean by that, because the terminology is really important here. The medical community often refers to autism levels 1, 2, and 3. Someone diagnosed with level 1 autism generally requires less daily support.
Right.
They typically don't have an intellectual disability, and their challenges might center more around social nuances or executive functioning, like managing a schedule. For an individual at this level, an off-the-shelf smartwatch might actually be an incredible tool for growth. It helps them set alarms, organize their day, and feel connected.
Conversely, individuals diagnosed with level 2 or level 3 autism require substantial or very substantial support. They might be nonverbal, have profound difficulty communicating their needs, and exhibit a really high risk for wandering.
Yeah.
For these individuals, a mainstream smartwatch isn't an organizational tool, it's a liability.
And the Angel Sense Guide brings this abstract data to life with two deeply affecting case studies. The first is Morgan. She's a 31-year-old autistic woman. For most of her life, both she and her mother were anxious about Morgan navigating the community alone.
Understandably.
But they introduced a specialized watch with tracking software. That watch provided just enough of a safety net that Morgan now takes the bus and goes shopping entirely on her own.
That's amazing.
The technology gave Morgan her autonomy, and it gave her mother the peace of mind to step back.
It's a textbook example of technology acting as a bridge to independence.
It truly is.
Yeah.
But then we look at the second case study, a young boy named Caden. He is an 11-year-old nonverbal boy with severe autism. The guide details this harrowing incident where Caden was put onto the wrong school bus and was lost for over an hour.
Oh, that's every parent's worst nightmare.
Because he couldn't communicate his name or address to the driver, his mother was in an agonizing state of panic. After that trauma, his mother understandably felt she could never let him out of her sight again.
For a family in that situation, the stakes are literal life and death. The goal isn't learning to manage a daily schedule. The goal is just surviving the trip home from school.
Right. So Caden now wears a tamper-proof monitor securely fastened to his belt. His mother relies entirely on the proactive geofence alerts. She uses the auto-answer speakerphone to silently monitor the audio environment of his school bus. If anything goes wrong, she can dispatch first responders to his exact GPS coordinates with one tap.
Looking at Morgan and Caden, you see the massive spectrum of human reality. The question becomes, how does a family move across that spectrum?
Mm-hmm.
How do you transition from the absolute lockdown, tamper-proof supervision required for an 11-year-old like Caden to trusting an adult like Morgan with an independence-focused wearable?
That feels like an impossibly heavy burden for a parent to figure out on their own.
It is, but the most encouraging insight from this deep dive is that the technology is beginning to solve its own problem. It isn't a rigid binary choice anymore between a locked box and total freedom. Yeah, the ideal solution, which systems like Angel Sense are developing, is a hybrid approach. The software and the hardware are decoupled.
Wait, meaning the physical device can look one way, but behave entirely differently based on who is using it?
Precisely. The technology is designed to evolve alongside the executive functioning of the user. A child might begin their journey wearing a heavily secured, tamper-proof belt clip because they are an extreme flight risk.
Right.
But over years of occupational therapy and development, that child might learn safety protocols. They might develop better communication skills. As their capacity grows, the hardware can graduate. They can transition to wearing a standard-looking watch that doesn't draw attention to them socially.
Oh, they get the dignity of wearing what looks like a mainstream consumer device.
Yes. But, and this is the crucial part, the caregiver still controls the software restrictions via their own smartphone. The watch might look like a standard piece of tech, but the games and notifications are still disabled to prevent sensory overload. The real-time runner mode and the auto-answer emergency protocols remain silently active in the background. The safety net never goes away. It simply becomes less restrictive as the human being becomes more capable.
The technology adapts to the human, instead of forcing the human to adapt to the limitations of the technology.
Which is the core philosophical lesson of this entire exploration. Evaluating technology, especially for vulnerable populations, requires an entirely different framework than reading a spec sheet at an electronics store.
We've covered a lot of ground today. We started by unpacking the flawed premise of retrofitting mainstream phones on a wrist for emergency situations, contrasting that with a single-minded focus of purpose-built caregiver-first trackers.
Yeah, the scalpel versus the Swiss Army knife.
Exactly. We looked at the underlying physics of adaptive battery intelligence, the mechanics of seamless network handoffs indoors, and the vital importance of real-time update frequencies.
We examined the neurology behind sensory processing, too, understanding why physical wearability and tamper-resistant fabrics are fundamental safety features, not just accessories.
Right.
And we explored the emotional complexities of using software to bridge the gap between necessary supervision and earned independence.
Which brings us back to you listening to this.
Mm.
Whether you are navigating the complex world of special needs caregiving, or simply trying to understand how we design better tools for society, the takeaway is clear. A feature list is entirely meaningless if the architecture of the tool ignores the physical, cognitive, and emotional reality of the person using it.
You cannot engineer human behavior to fit a device. You must engineer the device to fit the reality of the human behavior.
That leaves me with one final lingering question for you to ponder today. We can clearly see the danger of taking a generalized mass-market smartwatch and forcing it into a highly specialized emergency role in the autism community. But it makes you wonder about the rest of our infrastructure. Where else in your life, in your workplace, or in society at large, are we trying to force one-size-fits-all consumer technology onto highly specialized human challenges? What else are we retrofitting when we should be purpose-building? Because when you just accept the glossy, off-the-shelf solution, you might not discover its fatal flaw until the exact moment you need it to work.